to the show. If it's Wednesday night, it's time for Race Trackers. Last week's big races at Saratoga and Monmouth Park did nothing to clear up the three-year-old picture, but instead guaranteed a huge field for the Travers later this month at Saratoga. On the West Coast, Stellar Wind showed she is as game as they come by wearing down Val Dori again and looks ready to challenge Songbird later this year in the filly and mare division. This week, we look to the older horses as Gunrunner highlights the Whitney at Saratoga and the West Virginia Derby at Mountaineer Park keeps the three-year-olds in the picture. I'm Bill Gottemer with my co-host, Mike Monroe. As you know, each week, we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Wednesday night. As I said, I'm proud to be joined by Mike Monroe as my co-host. Hello, Mike. I seem to be having some technical difficulty in patching Mike in, so we'll try that again at some point. I apologize for that. Hopefully Mike will call back in again. But as we said, last week's three-year-old picture got muddier rather than clearer last week when the Jim Dandy came, was a showdown between Always Dreaming, who had won the Kentucky Derby, and Cloud Computing, who had won the Preakness. And we expected to see quite a showdown, and it lived up to its billing until about the quarter pole when both of those horses came up empty, possibly showing the fatigue from the earlier efforts in the three-year-old Triple Crown trail. And we wound up with Good Samaritan for Bill Mott coming from behind for their impressive victory. Good evening, Mike. Have you joined us now?
Hey, Bill. How are you this evening?
Fine, thanks. We apologize for the technical difficulties. I know you were on there, but I couldn't hear you or you couldn't hear me, so I'm glad you called back in again.
No problem. I heard you loud and clear. I guess it was on my end.
Okay. We started to talk a little bit about last week, and I started talking on my own about the Jim Dandy and how disappointing that turned out to be. We thought it would be the big matchup between Always Dreaming from the Kentucky Derby winner and the Preakness winner, Cloud Computing, and instead we didn't see much of a battle from either of them.
No, just another example, Bill, of when the gates open, anything can happen. And kudos to Bill Mott. He won another race on his birthday, and he picked the right race to win, the Jim Dandy. I was a little impressed, though, with Doug O'Neill's horse, the second-time starter from California. I thought he ran a very credible race, and I don't think we've heard the last of him.
No, I agree. I mean, what Mike is referring to beforehand is Bill Mott always celebrates his birthday up in Saratoga, and it seems like he always wins a race on his birthday or sometimes more than one, and it's become a bit of a handicapping angle and a joke, but this year he won the stakes race, the Jim Dandy. Mike, I agree with you. Pavel, I think this is the way it's pronounced, in his second lifetime start, stretching out from 6.5 furlongs to a mile and an eighth, was pretty roundly ridiculed by most people, most handicappers, thinking that it was way too much an effort to try to do, and I guess most of us thought he would be a speed factor against Always Dreaming, but that turned out not to be the case. He rated, and turning for home, he put in quite a bit of a charge, a really big effort for a second-time starter.
Oh, absolutely. I was very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard to determine how strong the race was. I mean, Good Samaritan's a nice horse, and they did explain that they ran him on the grass because they wanted him to go along as a two-year-old, and he ran so well on the grass that they didn't want to disturb it by moving him to the dirt right away. They were always looking for an opportunity, and I guess he disappointed us this year as a three-year-old. We've spoken about him on the show. He disappointed a few times on the grass, and they decided to take a shot on the dirt, and he seemed to love it. And, I mean, he came from way off the pace, and he won easily. I can't determine whether I'm as impressed by his run or whether I'm so disappointed in the others. Do you think it was a real winning effort, or do you think it was an optical illusion because the others just came up empty?
I think it's a combination of both. I think you hit on the key points. Always Dreaming and Cloud Computing didn't show up. That's why I was impressed with the horse from California so much. Maybe that's why we were impressed with him so much. Also, Giuseppe the Great ran an incredible race, but was that a suck-up second? You know, we had spoken many times on the air about Good Samaritan and the way he hung on the money in the grass. Now moving to the dirt, I mean, did he just pass a field of tired horses, or is he that much better on the dirt? But with a conditional like Bill Mott, I mean, he ran him on the grass first time out and never run him on the dirt. So, you know, was Bill taking a shot, you know, to round out a small field race and hopefully get, you know, pick up a third or maybe a second place finish? I mean, you know, going into it, you know, do you really think he thought he could beat the two horses? I say no. But then again, that's why they have to run the race.
Right. Well, I saw Elian Walden, who's the owner and manager of Windstar Farm, who owns Good Samaritan. And I saw him interviewed before the race, and he said they were always looking for an opportunity to try the dirt, and, you know, why not now? For our listeners who may not be old enough, this is very reminiscent of a horse that Bill Mott had 20-somewhat years ago named Cigar, who ran on the grass and disappointed on the grass and shifted to the dirt and became a world beater, winning 16 in a row. So it has happened, and it has happened in Bill Mott's barn before. It's sort of like Back to the Future in some ways.
Absolutely, Bill. I mean, I remember the race as if it was yesterday at Belmont Park when Cigar switched to the dirt. I think actually Julie Crone rode him in that start at Belmont, and then, you know, the rest is history.
Right. Well, you have a good memory. I don't remember Julie Crone riding him that day, but I know she did ride him. And I guess the other point is it drives home the point, and this is for fans and listeners to our show and gamblers and handicappers, just how grueling the Triple Crown trail is. I mean, you see horses who go through the Triple Crown obstacle course, the prep races to get there, run well in the Triple Crown, even win in the Triple Crown, and everyone thinks they can come back in a little while, and they give all indications that they're ready to come back, but sometimes it just takes something out of them. I mean, we had Terry Finley on the show last week, and we thank him for being on, and he talked about always dreaming and how well he was doing and how calm he had become in training. I didn't like it all the way he went to the post. He seemed fine in the paddock, but by the time he went to the post during the post parade, he was all sweated up, and by the time he went into the gate, he looked like he had expended an awful lot of energy already, and I kind of thought going into the gate he wouldn't run very well. Cloud computing, I'm not sure what that was all about. I thought he would run much better.
Yeah, he didn't fire at all, Bill. I mean, he made a little run, and that was it. And, you know, that's unlike a Chad Brown runner. I mean, they were pointing for that race, and hopefully pointing to the Travis. Now I guess you got to scratch your head and reopen the playbook.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of as an excuse for cloud computing, you know, when we spoke about it before, when Pavel did not go to the front, like we expected, I think cloud computing found himself in chase mode, meaning he had to stay close to Always Dreaming, and maybe he was rushed earlier than he liked and expended too much energy. But all in all, it was a little bit reminiscent of last year's race, where it was won by a maiden, last year's Jim Dandy, which was won by a maiden. But it's kind of a cautionary tale, boy, that those horses who go through the Triple Crown grind, it's the rare one that can hold his form all the way through, and I don't really know what they'll do with Always Dreaming. I know Todd Pletcher was noncommittal, and I haven't heard yet what their plans are with cloud computing, whether or not they're all still on board for the Travers. I think Good Samaritan is probably pointing towards the Travers, I'm sure.
Well, you know, Bill, you made an interesting point there about, you know, with the horse Pavel not going to the lead, and maybe, you know, he was rushed faster than he wanted to. But if you look at the Preakness, you know, everyone expected the outside horse, the 10 horse, to pressure Always Dreaming that day. And when he broke slow, Classic Empire, had to go. And he might have went a little bit sooner than we all would have thought, and that might have cost him the race in the end when cloud computing ran him down. So like you said, anything can unfold in a horse race and when the gates open, but you made a good point, Always Dreaming. You know, Todd Pletcher seemed very confident going into the race, you know, that he was training well and everything. And, you know, but like a lot of people, I know a lot of people said to me after the race, he just didn't warm up well, and he didn't seem like himself, you know, almost like a week before when Mike Smith told us about Arrogate.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, it's just a reminder to reminder to fans and gamblers alike that, you know, reputations are well earned, but they don't really do anything that particular day. If you're not ready to run that day or you're not feeling right that day, it's not going to help you. The next day was the Haskell, and that's even a bigger purse. And that was even more of a head scratcher, right? Everyone had pointed, Irish War Cry had pointed to that race, and everybody was saying the owner was saying, and Graham Motion was saying that was a bigger priority for them than the Kentucky Derby. And Irish War Cry didn't run very well. Battle of Midway broke bad and didn't run very well. Practical Joke, who has had so much promise for Chad Brown, was kind of spotty and kind of hung a little bit. And you wound up having two of the earlier Triple Crown horses who had disappointed in Triple Crown battling to the wire, McCracken and Girvin. What were your thoughts on how that unfolded?
Well, Bill, I hate to kind of be a sore loser, but I love McCracken going into the race. I made a nice bet on McCracken, and I still can't believe that Girvin caught me on the wire. Congratulations to Joe Sharp and Robbie Alvarado and their connections, but it was a head scratcher if you bet on McCracken. I don't know anybody who still questions how a horse from after you made the move, the horse from behind you caught you at the wire. I don't know. But, you know, Practical Joke, I thought he ran a credible race too. Timeline was questionable. I guess he's not the distance horse we thought he was. And, you know, it just opens up the three-year-old picture to be more wide open than ever.
Right. I mean, I guess the two comments I'll have on McCracken and Girvin is both of them were hampered in their Triple Crown races by small injuries. McCracken had a small injury coming out of the race in Tampa. Girvin had a small injury leading up to the actual Kentucky Derby. So neither were at their best during the Triple Crown races, and maybe, you know, having not been beaten up in that race helped them, and they're going to have a stronger horse moving forward. I guess McCracken does have a tendency to pull himself up when he gets to the lead, but it was an oddly run race. Girvin never looked like a winner until the very last jump. Practical Joke, in my eyes, never looked like a winner, even though he was only beaten in the neck. Somehow he never looked like a winner. You know, Irish War Cry seems to be a horse who absolutely needs the lead now. He has unsuccessfully tried to raid or come from off the pace a number of times now. So I don't know what conclusion to draw from any of it other than the fact that you're going to have a huge field, I think, in the Travers, because everyone's going to take a shot. Why not? There's no standout. I guess Girvin's win makes Doug O'Neill's horse IRAP look that much better in retrospect. IRAP has won the Bluegrass and then has won some smaller stakes around the country, beating Girvin. So I don't really know what to make of the whole thing, to be honest with you. And it'll be interesting to see who makes it to the Travers and you know, who is the favorite. I can't even kind of venture a guess.
Do we have a 7-2, 4-1 favorite in the Travers? I've been on another wide open event.
You might have a 20 horse field, and I say that, but I don't know how high they'll go at Saratoga. I forget exactly how high they'll go. I've seen 16. I don't know if I've ever seen 20.
I think you're right, Bill. I think it's 16 is the cutoff.
Right. So, you know, it could be after years of having prohibitive favorites and races that people complained weren't good betting races, now you're going to have one that's, I think, is anybody's guess. It's the picture is more muddied than ever. You know, Hentz didn't run well at all. Later on, we're going to talk a little bit about the West Virginia Derby, which is this Saturday, and again, that's 3-year-olds. But the 3-year-old picture is there's no standout right now. That's the thing you certainly can say.
Absolutely.
Before we talk about Stellar Wind, I do want to lead in a little bit to who our guest will be tonight. Our guest will be jockey Ricardo Santana Jr., and I guess will his agent Ruben Munoz be joining us as well, or will we just be
I think
Ricardo?
We're going to be listening in, but I think we'll be Ricardo's definitely calling in. I think we're going to have Ruben who's listening in. I reached Ruben this afternoon. He had a couple things doing, but we're definitely going to have Ricardo.
Oh, good. Excellent. Well, we'll do the introduction when he comes on, but For our listeners who may not be familiar with him, Ricardo Santana Jr. wins a lot of races and a lot of big races and has a bright future here and is going to probably, I believe, stay in New York for as long as he can after the Saratoga meet and maybe even plans to stick around through Aqueduct, but we'll see. With that, I want to thank our guests for last week. Last week we had a jam-packed show. We had Mike Smith, Terry Finley, Carlos Martin, and an interview with equine photographer Barbara Livingston. So I thank all of them for their time. And I know last week's show was well-received, Mike. I don't know if you heard much about it, but I received a lot of nice comments and compliments on the lineup we had last week and the content.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I thought it was a great show.
Yeah. Well, we may do a little bit. We haven't necessarily taken very many callers in the last few weeks or the last few months because we've been jam-packed with guests. Tonight we may take some calls, and maybe no one will call, but if you want to call us, it's 646-716-4442. And a couple of topics we'd like to talk about a little bit, and Mike, you and I spoke about this a little bit before, there's a couple of controversial things that seem to be happening in New York right now, and one of them is a track bias. And I understand today, I didn't follow all the races today, but I understand today it was a little more evenly distributed. But up until today, at least, if you weren't on the inside and you weren't on the front, you had a very difficult time to win. And that play on the main track, and that plays havoc with handicappers and bettors because it doesn't seem to be a truly run race. And I guess wanted to get, if anybody wanted to call and talk about that. The more controversial issue has been the New York stewards' reluctance to disqualify any horses and to seem to allow a lot of rough riding to take place. And I know, Mike, you and I discussed it, and it's been the talk of a lot of things in racing. And if anybody wanted to call and give us their opinion as to why that is, or maybe we're wrong, but it seems to us that it's gotten much, much rougher in the last year or so, or maybe even a year and a half, and I kind of wondering why that is. So let me give you the number if anybody wants to give a call, and it's 646-716-4442. And with that, I want to go back to last week's racing before we start looking forward. Stellar Wind, you know, the beautiful mare out on the West Coast, she battled Val Dori again to a neck victory, and I thought it was just tremendous. And I don't know if you got an opportunity to see that, but she's really a nice horse, Stellar Wind.
Bill, as game as they come, she always seems to be the bridesmaid. But I tell you, what a great race she ran on Sunday, and very, very competitive filly. Every time she goes, she's been a hard luck filly too. A couple of the big races, she had a little bit of gate trouble and a couple of tough trips. Otherwise, she could have been right there, you know, in this category with Beholder and Songbird. She shows up every time.
Right. I mean, she lost all chance at the Breeders' Cup Distaff, and that's why she wasn't with Beholder and Songbird. Actually, Mike, we have a caller, so I may take that and say, oh, see who
great.
This is. Let's
great.
Good evening. Welcome to Race Trackers.
Hello, Bill. Hello, Mike. It's Pat Cannon. How are you?
Hey,
hello,
Pat.
Happy Saratoga.
Yeah. Now, are you calling from the spa? I know you go up and down all the time. Are you up north or down south right now?
Well, actually, right now I'm down south, but my wife and my daughter are in Saratoga. And I just watched two minutes ago, you know, there is a harness track across the street, and they race four nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. And Wednesday night is the New York bred maiden trotters, and my tender prayer just broke his maiden about 10 minutes ago. But I didn't see anybody in Wind Circle. My wife is at the Philadelphia Orchestra, and who knows where Grace is. So that's exciting news.
Well, congratulations. That's the, and you said that's a baby. Is that that's one of your first starts, or is it?
He's got about, he's 3 years old. He's got about six starts. So
okay.
It was a nice race and a nice prize. He went up 5-1, so that was exciting. That was exciting to see. I'm downstate right now.
Congratulations on the win. That's excellent.
Thank you. But you guys are doing a great job. You know, keeping everybody informed. The last week's show was fantastic, and I think you bring up a very important point. Two points, really. The track has had its ups and downs. I mean, this has always been a very, very fair racetrack, but as was mentioned on the show before the meet started, they did tinker with the track. They made it a more sandy surface, and I think they're having their ups and downs there, getting that right. I mean, the very first day we were there together, Bill, those first races were laughably slow, crazy slow. And then it seems like they try to speed it up within the next few days. But what has happened is a crazy rail bias, which nobody wants.
Right.
So they're struggling right now with what's going on in a racetrack. You know, they have an extremely accomplished track superintendent. So I'm sure they're going to get it right, but it's a little disconcerting to see the track playing so unfairly right now.
Last week. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, that was Pat. Go ahead, Pat.
Oh.
Well, I was just going to say there was when right after they, I think, tried to speed it up. There were two fatalities in the morning on the main track. So it's a real, balancing act that they've got to go through right now. I mean, it's easy to make a very sandy, safe track, but you still want to, you still want a fair race track.
Right. Yeah, you can't bet with any confidence when there's such a bias because the best horse is not often winning. And I guess it was Monday. It seemed like if you were even 3 feet off the rail, you couldn't go anywhere. It seems like whoever was on the rail won. You saw them trying to get so close to each other because they both were fighting to run on the better part of the track. And they were all the horses were all over each other, but no one passed anybody in the stretch. And that makes for frustrating results and kind of some unfair advantages or disadvantages. And it just I can't help but hurt the quality of racing. Pat,
I want to mention that before we get off the topic, doesn't that make Good Samaritan's race that much more impressive when the Derby winner and the Preakness winner are going at it along the rail, and he's about four or five outside, and just took control of that race. That to me has been the most impressive race so far because of the track bias. He was way outside making a very late move on a day where the speed was not holding up at all. I mean, the speed was holding up. The closes were not doing anything, and he came from way out of it. So I think that the Good Samaritan is definitely, to me, is the man of the three-year-old class right now.
Well, you're right. I mean, no one else did that. But as Mike and I were saying, you just don't know if it was an optical illusion or not. The other bunch was so bad, you don't know what to make of it. But you're right. He's the only horse who did that. He's the only horse who managed to go outside, and run by everybody like that. And it was impressive visually. And I just don't know. And he may be the one who's freshest of all. So I would think he'll get a lot of backing in the Travers. My guess is.
But,
I want to talk about the riding. Have you noticed? I mean, it's a controversial subject. Nobody wants to talk about rough riding, but it seems to me like it's gotten much rougher in the last year or so.
Well, it seems the state of New York racing is you can do anything you want at the start. This a couple of days ago, I read from inside, took out the 2, 3, and 4, and then went on his merry way and was not DQ'd. And that has been the policy of the stewards most recently. Now, there was a time, a long time ago, Bill and Mike, when a foul was a foul.
Right.
And that was it. But now they've seemed to gone with, well, you know, if the bettors have the winner, we've got to come up with this subjective analysis that did the foul cost the winner of the race, that type of thing. And I don't buy it. I don't buy it. If you impede a horse during a race, I don't care if it's at the start, the middle, or at the end of the race, that's a foul.
Right.
And,
see,
and somebody's going to get hurt at the start. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's been going on way too long.
That's
and
my total agreement, Pat.
One more thing. Now is the time for your National Replay Center, Bill.
Right.
This is the time right now because the New York Sewers are not protecting these Jugger Jacks.
Pat, you just made some great comments. The worst thing that they started doing was showing the start of every race, because if you show the start of every race, you could almost say that there's going to be an inquiry in every race. So the worst thing they ever did was show the break on every race, in my opinion. The second thing is, you cannot tell me if a horse comes over at the start of the race that it has no impact on the finish. I mean, where do you come up with that it doesn't change, it's not going to change the order of finish? How do you know what's going to happen anywhere during a horse race? I mean, for these stewards to come up with a statement like that is absolutely ridiculous. And unfortunately, it's going to happen at the worst time where they're going to make a terrible call that's going to be questioned against them just to show that they are going to disqualify somebody, or, unfortunately, somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah. If you've got a horse that needs to be forwardly placed, and right at the start, and this has been talked about on the show, when one horse slams into another horse, it's almost like they lose their breath. It's like they get their breath knocked out of them. That's the end of the race. The end of the race if you need to be on or near the lead.
Right.
Yet they let
it
go.
They let it go with the thinking that
there's another mile and a half, mile and an eighth rather, left in the race. He's got time to recover. Well, he's not going to recover from that.
Yeah, it used to be that a rider had one jump out of the gate, meaning that you couldn't come out 100% straight. So you had one jump out of the gate, but then you had to straighten them out. And sometimes there was more leeway given to two-year-olds just because they're more erratic and they're less experienced. But now it seems to be that anything in the first, five, six, seven jumps of the race is considered okay. And the other day, I mean, the idea, and I think, Mike, what you're referring to is saying that they didn't think any speed horses were impacted because there were no other speed horses in that race. And then the horses who were pushed to the back were expected to be in the back. But that's getting way too fine in an analysis. I mean, when you come out of the gate and make a right-hand turn for four jumps and slam, 75% of your rivals, there has to be some sort of comeuppance for that. And I guess what really bugs me is the idea that what's in the stretch is different than what's earlier in the race, Mike. I agree with that. And the only other point would be, I guess those of us who are old enough to remember, Ron Turcotte was paralyzed in an accident pretty much out of the gate. It wasn't too far out of the gate after that.
Flag of Leotard Gulf, trained by Mike Freeman. I remember that too, Bill.
Right. I remember it like it was yesterday. You don't have to wait till somebody gets hurt to stop the rough riding. That's coming out of the gate, but then they're permitting riders to herd other jockeys through the stretch. And for our listeners who don't know what herding is, it's not bumping, it's not really impeding, but it's drifting into someone's path, and it prohibits a horse from moving forward with confidence, or prohibits a rider from moving forward with confidence. And what typically happens with herding is you herd, and then when you get to the point where you someday somebody just decides to run through the herding and someone clips heels and someone goes down. So I'm of the firm opinion that they have to start disqualifying some horses just to encourage people to keep a straight path. But But with that, Pat, the timing.
The thing with the herding, though, I mean, thoroughbreds, the show off their speed and their alpha maleness, by getting involved in a contest. So, when a jockey puts a horse next to another horse, that they're trying to, dig into that competitive nature of the animal that would naturally wants to win the race. But the herding, putting a horse next to another animal, to me is not that bad, because as long as you keep your path, I mean, you've got to keep your path. You've got to make sure that you're not impeding the other horse as they go along. And the two most brilliant riders in New York right now, the Ortiz brothers, boy, did they hurt it. They really hurt. They put their animal next to another one on the track, and it's mano a mano. But I know what you mean.
Right.
It's a dangerous practice because they're putting fast animals right next to each other. But the herding doesn't bother me as much as what's going on in the start right now. It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. How much they're getting away.
Even the herding when they're next to each other is not such a big deal. It's when a horse is in front and he just drifts through the stretch, and kind of takes a horse out, because the rider on the horse who's second has to decide whether to continue drifting out or just run up on the heels of the horse in front of him. And that's when people get hurt. Pat, I don't mean to cut this short, but we have our main guest, Ricardo Santana, waiting. I don't want to leave him on hold. Do you want to call back in after we have the interview?
No. I'll stay on the line. Listen.
Okay, great. Okay, good. So let's welcome to Racetrackers.
Hello.
Hello, Ricardo. Welcome to Racetrackers. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Ricardo, we have three interviewers on with us: Mike Monroe, Pat Cannon, and myself, Bill Gottimer. And thank you so much for joining us. Racing fans don't need an introduction for racing fans, but we'll give a quick one. You've been riding in the United States since 2009, and you're quickly closing in on 1,000 wins overall lifetime. And you're having one of your better years ever this year, and you've gotten off to a flying start at Saratoga with 6 wins already at the meet. So thank you for joining us. Congratulations. I think we lost Ricardo there. We lost the call. So we'll have. I hope he'll call back in. Well, we'll give him a second to see if he calls back in. As we said, Ricardo Santana has come to the New York circuit in Saratoga right now, and he's ridden in a number of places around the country, won a number of big races on big horses. He's looking to join the New York colony now for full time. And as we said, he got off to a flying start in Saratoga with, I think he has 6 wins already. Mike, do I have that correct? I may have lost everybody. I'm not sure here. Let's try it again.
I'm here, Ben.
Hello, Ricardo.
How you
welcome
doing?
Back. I'm sorry about that. I don't know if that was us or your phone. But, Ricardo, we were just introducing you and saying how you're having your best year ever, and you started off Saratoga now. You have 6 wins already in the young meet, and we just wanted to congratulate you and welcome you to the New York circuit.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel so blessed to be here. You know, that was one of my dreams, be here riding one of the best riders in the country.
Well, this is the toughest jockey colony you can find, right? I mean, there's no question about it that this is, right now, this is the premier meet, and you've had a lot of success around the country. My understanding is, though, that you're coming to New York and you're going to stay in New York after the Saratoga meet. Is that correct?
Yes, I decided that because I think that's one of the top racetracks, and I want to prove my point that I'm one of the good ones, you know, to be riding over here. And my aunt's doing a great job, and he want to stay here with me. So we decide to stay here when Saratoga is over.
Well, that's great. I mean, you had a nice meet last year at Saratoga. I think you had 14 or 15 wins. You have 6 already this year. And last Sunday, you had 3 wins on the opening Sunday. You had 3 wins on the card, all in succession. That must have been a big day for you, I'm sure.
I feel blessed. I feel blessed that riding for a lot of different trainers, a lot of good trainers giving to me opportunity in the horses. My aunt is doing a great job, and I feel blessed to be here. I can't believe how good I started and meet here right now.
Well, you're known as a very strong finisher, and you're an aggressive rider, meaning you put the horses on the lead. And I guess that's a style you've developed when you learn to ride. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you come from Panama, and your father was a rider as well.
Yeah, my dad was a rider in Panama. He never traveled. And I started riding when I was 13 years old in Panama. I graduated when I was 16. And there my aunt, Ruben Munoz, bring me to U.S. We had started in Delaware, and I was 16 years old. We coming to New York, to Ecuador in the winter. I got a drop from Rosina Prani when I was 16, 17 years old in Ecuador. And we would have a time off there, like a year or something like that. And we come back and we start working again in Delaware in 2012. And there to now, thank God that we have a blessed years every year. We're doing great. And I'm blessed to have my aunt with me. You know, we have a really good team. And I feel blessed that they have him.
Well, leaving home at the young age of 16 must have been difficult. Tell us about that. But did you have second thoughts when you left home? You must have felt homesick when you first came to the U.S.
I feel a little weird first, a couple months. You know, I never leave my family. I never leave my mom and my dad. I'm the young one in the family. But my aunt always give it to me love. He always, you know, he opened his arm for me. He always treat me like I'm his son. And I feel comfy with him. I'm the head in the family. My dad can't walk. He's in a wheelchair because he had an accident when I was like 13 years old. He fell from the horse. And I feel that I was the head in the family, and I want to give it to my mom and my dad, good life. And that's why I always work hard and keeping my mind straight, because I want to meet my mom and my dad. I want to give it to them to life.
Well, that's great. Mike, you know Ricardo's agent, Ruben Munoz, and you know how hard it is to be a jockey's agent. Tell us a little bit about your interactions with Ricardo.
Ricardo, I've always followed his career as a young rider when he was at Delaware. But I have to tell you, as Ricardo said, Ruben Munoz, who is first of all a very good friend of mine, and he's a terrific agent, and he really doesn't deserve the credit that he gets. He discovered Ricardo at 16, brought him along, and Ruben is that way. He opens his heart up to these riders, and he teaches them, and he gets them on the best horses and develops their career at a very, very young age. He also did the same with Angel Arroyo. He brought Angel Arroyo here when he was 16 years old, the same as Ricardo, and you see the way he's developed Angel Arroyo. Ruben actually had sent Angel Arroyo to me in New York when he was barely, you know, he was only at the Meadowlands for a couple of weeks at night, and then Ruben sent him to me, and he was 16 years old, and he was riding in the toughest colony around in New York. And my kudos to Ruben. He does an excellent job with every rider that he has, and I think Ricardo will agree with me. He's not only a hard worker, but he's a great person.
That's great. I mean, in your short time already, in your short career, you've ridden some very nice horses. You have a number of stakes winners. A lot of them you rode for the Steve Asmussen Bond, and I'm talking mostly about Creator and Terra Promessa and Tapiture, Holy Boss. You won a graded stakes race in Saratoga last year with him. How do you keep it straight with all the horses that Steve Asmussen has?
Well, we have a good relationship. My and I have a great relationship with Steve. He always is another one that always dreams with his son. He always gives to me great opportunity. I started riding with him when I was 18 years old, 3 years ago. And Delaware, when I got Ruben back, and then he started giving to me great opportunity. I wore so many good horses for Steve. I broke Gold Run and Mating. I broke Gold Run and Mating in Churchill like 2 years
right.
ago. He gave me the opportunity to ride a Creator. What about Macy Horse? With my first grade with him. Tierra Promesa, she's another amazing filly to ride. And I feel blessed that be working on Steve. He gave it to me so many great opportunities, and I owe him a lot. Like, I owe Ruben too. To that two person, I owe him a lot in my life.
Yeah, absolutely,
well,
absolutely. You've come a long way in such a short time, and you also ride now for Bill and I have followed you, and you ride a lot of the Sagamore Farm horses for Horatio De Paz, who I think is training at 28% for the year, and he's an excellent horseman. I was very impressed with a filly that you rode on opening day here at Saratoga named Southampton Way, who disappointed first time out as a heavy favorite, maybe had an excuse that day, Ricardo, but she really ran a nice race, breaking her maiden up here on opening day, and I think she might have a future.
This is a great feeling. Horacio De Paz told me before the race, he was a lot. He had a lot of confidence in that filly. He was believing that this filly was going to run good, and she didn't. She's a really amazing filly, and I think we got a great future with that filly.
And Mike, again, that horse's name is Southampton Way, correct? Do I have that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Ricardo, this week you're leaving Saratoga for an opportunity in West Virginia. You're going to ride in the West Virginia Derby, which is a purse of $750,000, and you're going to ride a few horses on the undercard. That's a difficult racetrack to ride on because it's so small. It's such a different configuration. How do you prepare, or how does that change your style to ride on such a small racetrack as Mountaineer Park?
Well, I like to watch a lot of replays from the track. They always go to ride. I got a lot of confidence in my trainers that I'm going to ride. I'm going to ride a couple for Steve. I got for Yul Shore. And Mike is still Steeden. All right, one more for him. Well, I got a lot of confidence in the horses. I always watch the replays every try I go to ride, and I always put my confidence first in the horses and me, you know. And I think I have a good shot there Saturday, and a couple races and all the races.
Now, one of the horses that you ride at West Virginia for Steve Asmussen is a horse called Iron Fist, and Iron Fist is a 5-year-old by Tappet. But my understanding is he's a little bit nutty. He's a very difficult horse to train and to ride. And you had some luck with him at Prairie Meadows. Have you figured out how to ride him yet? I mean, or is he really that difficult to get to try?
I rode a horse last year. I rode a horse 2 times, one in Kingland and one in Churchill. And I started figuring out how difficult the horse to ride. And then I had an appointment two weeks ago. And I started figuring out how that horse liked to run. And now I think I got him pretty good. And I think we get great team in the horse and me.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we talk about on this show all the time is tappets are temperamental, and tappets are sometimes hard to get them to do what you want. And I guess Iron Fist seems like he has all the talent in the world, yet you have to get him to try. So I'm glad you managed to figure that out for them.
Thank you so much. I really like that horse. That's a really cool horse to ride. Really quiet horse. He's really weird to ride if you don't know him at all. I think I figured out him pretty good.
Go ahead, Mike.
I just wanted to say, Ricardo, you know, you've done an excellent job here. You and Ruben are working together. You got great chemistry. You look great on a racehorse. You've opened a lot of eyes in New York. So I think the sky is the limit for you and Ruben to remain in New York or wherever you're going to go together to be successful. You're a great team, and I just think it's onward and upward for you guys in your career.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate it a lot.
And I think to reiterate what Mike says, and Pat, I want to get you in here if you want to ask a question. But Ricardo, I think you're becoming known for just a tremendously good finisher. It seems like you get the last ounce out of horses. There's many horses that look like they're about to be caught, and somehow you coax a little more out of them to get them across the wire. And the ride on Jimmy Ferraro's horse the other day on Monday, I think it was. You know, on the grass, it seemed like that horse was about to get swallowed up, and somehow you managed to just keep him going through perseverance. And I know owners and trainers and bettors alike, you know, really appreciate that kind of effort. I think the horse's name was True Charm, who I'm thinking about.
Yeah, she does have a history of getting caught in the final stages of races. And like Bill said, Ricardo, just a tremendous ride on that filly, just a brilliant ride, because she does like to lay down in the last 100 yards or so.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for that. You know, I used to like to try hard for everybody. I like to do my job. And that's all I do, try hard for everybody to stand. I love my job. I love what I do.
Well, you're a lucky man to like what you do so much. We'll let you go. We know morning comes early. I guess one last question before we go. Did you participate in jockey karaoke the other night on the up in Saratoga?
I was there, but I don't sing it because I'm a passing.
Okay. All right.
Well,
if you keep winning races, you have to. You're going to have to participate next year in jockey karaoke, and we don't expect you to be as good as Florent Giroux or Kendrick Carmouche, who I saw doing quite a story, quite a song. We'll let you go. We do want to wish you good luck on Weather Girl. You're riding Weather Girl later this week for our good friends over at Paradise Farms, another horse by Steve Asmussen, and owned by our friend Peter and Chris Gusty. And so we wish you well on him. We wish you luck on all your mounts, and we hope you'll come back to the show sometime soon.
Thank you so much, Guy, and have a great night, and God bless you, everybody.
Thank you, Ricardo. We'll see you soon, and give my best to Ruben, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ricardo Santana, everyone. I apologize to everyone for the difficulty as far as the quality. Sometimes on the phone it's just difficult to get top sound. But he's just another guy who's just so grateful to be where he is and amazing to think of leaving your home at such a young age and coming to such a rough and tumble sport and managing, as he said, to keep his head straight and just persevere. I mean, he's on a path to have $10 million in earnings this year.
He's got all the tools, and he's being guided by the right agent, which is so important in this game. Ruben does a fantastic job, works very hard, gets on the right horses, rides for the right people, and the sky's the limit for him.
Right. Well, thank you for setting that up, Mike. We appreciate it. And Ricardo Santana, for all our listeners, obviously someone to root for and someone to trust with your horses and your wagering dollar. With that, we have somebody on the line here. Let me see if this is someone who wants to weigh in on a conversation we were having a little earlier. Good evening. You're on Race Trackers. Hello?
Yeah, hi, Bill. Yes, hello, Bill.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, Bill, it's Steve Scrope calling in. How are you?
Hello, Steve. Thank you for calling in. You have Pat Cannon and Mike Monroe on board as well.
Yeah, I've been listening to the show. Great show and a great interview with Ricardo Santana. And I think it really hits home, what Ricardo was able to do out there. I know on opening day he rode in the sixth race in a 5.5 furlong race, a horse by the name of Buffalo Miss, for a friend of mine, Mike Madden. This is a horse who's got a lot of ability, runs on the front, and also can sometimes at the end have trouble holding a lead. But Ricardo took him out to the lead, took him all the way around, held on by a head or so at the end, and just did a great job riding him in the stretch. And interestingly, last year he did the exact same thing with the horse, and I think that the horse had he might have won one since then, but essentially he had been finishing around the top, but Ricardo right back on top of him, like he was last year, and he brought him home in a similar race. So he's really an outstanding jockey. And I know that you mentioned Steve Asmussen. There was a show I was listening to a while back where, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, where Steve Asmussen had basically said that in a big race, whenever he really wants to win, Ricardo Santana is the jockey that he wants on top of the horse. And that's who he tends to use in big races anywhere. And I just wanted to see if you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, he's had a long association with Steve Asmussen, and I guess he's not riding exclusively for Steve this year at Saratoga. Last year he may have, but yes, I mean, he clearly has ridden certainly out of town, certainly outside New York. He uses him all the time, right? Right, Mike?
Absolutely, yep. He's a go-to guy for him.
The amazing thing about the Asmussen barn, and some, we're going to have him on some night. We've often tried, and it's fallen through for one reason or another. But the Asmussen barn is so big, but it's probably the one that is most varied across the country, right? They have Gunrunner, who's arguably the best 4-year-old in the country, or among the best 4-year-olds in the country, Arrogant notwithstanding, and he also runs $4,000 claimers at Lone Star Parks, and Ricardo Santana rides all of them for him, and so he seems to be good with talented horses, not so talented horses, and going long, going short, going on the grass. It's just amazing how hard these guys work. Steve, did you have any thoughts about the rough riding that's taking place these days in New York racing?
Well, I was glad that you guys were talking about that in the beginning because essentially I think that you hit it right on the head. I mean, even and I know in the Derby you have young horses and they're inexperienced horses in a lot of ways. And I think back to the beginning of that race and how, with the trouble you had coming out of the gate there. And I know that that was a slippery track and a different story, and it's not quite what you're talking about with rough riding. But, I guess my question is, Bill, when was the last time anybody saw a horse DQ'd? Because maybe, there's a strategy out there of if you can knock, like Pat was saying, if you can knock the wind out of the out of a horse, if you out of a horse that's that you think is going to be a front runner and your big threat in the race, right in the very beginning. You know, if you're doing that in the stretch, there's a good shot they're going to take you down. But coming out of the gate, they just never seem to do it. And I know it's probably happened before, but when was the last time in any sort of meaningful race that you saw a horse just come out and slam into, you know, somebody who might be a contender and be taken down for that? Because I just can't recall I just can't recall it happening. So I was wondering if you guys can think back to any time it has happened.
I can't either. Recently, I mean, it used to happen pretty regularly, and sometimes it happened at times when you thought it was inadvertent. But just to, as Pat said before, the rule was the rule. If you impeded a horse or if you slammed into a horse, it didn't matter whether it was coming out of the gate or whether it was coming through the stretch. I guess when Bayern did that in the Breeders' Cup Classic and wasn't disqualified, I guess that kind of solidified that in people's minds that anything goes outside the gate, but anything goes coming out of the gate, but it's just reached kind of epidemic proportions. I don't even see people trying to keep their horses straight now, because as you say, if you can outbreak somebody and get in their path. Mike, do you remember, I remember Formal Gold, this is 20-something
mm-hmm.
years ago, did
mm-hmm.
that, and I think it was in the Whitney. Kent DeSormo did it. Your buddy Kent, our friend Kent, did it when it was a young Kent DeSormo, came out of the gate and immediately made a right-hand turn. And there was a big controversy, Stephen. They didn't take him down, and there was a big controversy, and it was he kind of denied. He said the horse, the dirt broke out from underneath his feet, and he couldn't help it. The horse lunged to the outside. But I think most observers thought that he did exactly what you spoke about there. There was another speed horse in there, and you might as well knock his block off right away. And that was controversial that they didn't take him down, because most people thought they would. But, you know, it wasn't unabashed. At least there was some deniability that it was on purpose. Now it seems like it's just run-of-the-mill tactics. And I don't know when it's going to end.
I'm still shocked that they never took Bayern down. But like Pat mentioned the other day at Saratoga with Irad Ortiz, the horse was smile big for Rudy Rodriguez. He broke from the one post, and a few strides out of the gate, he was in the 3 or 4 path, and several of the riders did have to check behind him. I mean, you saw it on the pan shot. It looked bad on the pan shot. And for them not to make a change there, I mean, I was completely shocked.
And this isn't being critical. Let's be clear. This isn't being critical of any of these riders, because they're all trying so hard to win. And of course, that's always the right. That's always the thing in this game. You know, you have people who are disgruntled as bettors claiming that someone wasn't trying to win or didn't give a top effort. They're all trying so hard to win. They're all ultra competitive. So I'm not. I want to be clear. I'm not knocking anybody here, or I'm not trying to take away or criticizing anyone. What I don't think they're focusing on is how reckless it can become. And until somebody gets hurt, that point isn't really driven home. And I guess I don't want to see any of these guys get hurt. We speak to so many of them on the show, and we know how hardworking they are. And we just heard it from Ricardo Santana. You know, they leave home at 15 years old and come into a strange and hostile work environment. And you don't ever want any of these guys who are top athletes to get hurt. And it's, I guess it's up to the, in my mind, it's up to the racing officials to make sure it's run safely. And there's been a lot of effort right now put in on the safety of horses, which is of course important. And Pat spoke about the two breakdowns that took care of this week, but I guess Mike and I and Steve, you and Pat, we're old enough to remember, you know, Mike Venezia and Mike Hole and as we said before, Ron Turcotte, and it can be a dangerous place when people don't keep a straight path. I would hope that the stewards would find the time to make a point of it and say now it's time to keep a straight path out of the gate, through the stretch, you know, everywhere. But they're not asking for my opinion.
Yeah, Bill, I'm Pat. I'm still here. There's a lot of young riders now, and they have a right to know what's good and what's unacceptable. The Ortiz brothers are in their early 20s. This young man has a great interview with Ricardo Santana. Santana's a young man. You know, they have a right to know what the rules are. And right now, there don't seem to be any rules, at the start, at least.
Yeah, it's Steve, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bill, that like anything else, the way to prevent it, and I think you've alluded to this before, and I guess the thing that I'm surprised at is if you take one or two of these horses down, they come out of the gate it's a foul. And if they're fouling other horses out of the gate, if you take a couple of these horses down at the end of the race with the inquiry and take them down, it generally, I think we know how this all works. It stops, and it just doesn't seem like there's any thought or any effort at all to try to do that. And I'd be more curious for you guys before I let you guys get on to other callers and everything to ask, like, why that is, why the stewards and why the racing association and the stewards don't sort of decide, hey, this is dangerous. We got to put a stop to it. So going forward for the rest of this meet, we're going to take very seriously the bumping coming out of the gate. And if it's incidental bumping and it's incidental contact, that's one thing. And if you can't tell who was at fault or whatever, that's understandable. But on the blatant stuff, why they wouldn't take down a couple of horses, because it would seem to me that at that point, then it stops. So that was the one thing I was going to ask you guys to comment on, is why we haven't seen any of that. And the second thing is, and if you alluded to this already, it's okay, because I dialed in late and I'll listen to the beginning of the show on replay. But my second area I was going to ask if you guys wouldn't mind commenting on is is what you think happened with Arrogate last week, and what your thoughts on him are going forward, if that was just an outright fluke or if there's something else going on there. So that's really all I had.
Well, to answer the two parts of your question, Steve, the first part is I totally agree with you, but being an agent, these guys get called into movies the next day every time there's an inquiry, and or a foul claim of that nature. What the public doesn't realize is after the films, the stewards then can give a rider a 5-day suspension, where if he takes it right away, it's only a 3-day suspension, or he has the right to appeal it for a further hearing, which is after the meet. Or they get punished by a monetary fine, which could be up to $1,000 or $2,000. So, I mean, you know, they're really, I guess their feeling is that they're trying not to punish the betting public as much, as Bill alluded earlier on. But you know what? Some of these fouls that they're disallowing certainly should be disqualified right there and then after the race, rather than waiting 2 days or 3 days to punish the rider monetarily or with a daily suspension. And the second part,
right.
About Arrogate is Bill and I, we had the pleasure of interviewing Mike Smith last week, and basically Mike Smith said, you know, he was just flat. He just wasn't himself. Mike said it going to the post. He just wasn't his normal self when they broke from the gate. He was just flat. And, you know, we know, Steve, you know, following the game, they're not machines. They're not automobiles.
Right.
Everybody's entitled to a bad day. They said he worked lights out again, and he's being pointed for the Pacific Classic. So we'll just see. Maybe he doesn't have a fondness for the Del Mar surface, or maybe the race in Dubai took a lot out of him. I guess the next race will remain to be seen. But I don't think we've seen. I think we'll see the old Arrogate when they come back in the Pacific Classic. At least I hope we will. But no, those were two great points, Steve.
Yeah, as far as Arrogate goes, we speculated this, not about Arrogate himself, but we talked last week about the difficulty of keeping a full, intact horse in training into the later part of their four-year-old year. You know, there comes a point where full horses who are not gelded start focusing on reproduction as opposed to racing. And I'm not saying that's the case with Arrogate. I don't know enough to know. I just know that one of the difficulties in keeping a horse in training through the end of a four-year-old year, and certainly into their five-year-old year, is that, you know, there comes a point where they just have had enough of one aspect of their life, and they're ready to move on to another aspect of their life. And I mean, as Mike says, you don't know with Arrogant. It was so flat. It could be that he hated that racetrack. It could be that he had some ill effects from the trip to Dubai. It could be a fluke, or it could be that he's kind of done enough. You know, I guess when you look back in that race in Dubai, where he broke so badly and he came from so far behind, who knows what that effort took out of him? I mean, it's a little bit like boxing matches, Steve. I know you're a boxing aficionado, and you know there's the Ali Frazier fight. It's a great fight, and neither one of them are ever the same after that ever again. You know, and
yep.
George Foreman had a fight where it was his Waterloo. You know, it was as good as he was going to get, and he was done afterwards. So I'm hoping that's not the case, but I think the jury's out as to whether or not. Now, Mike, I guess there was some hope that if Bob Baffert felt that Arrogant needed an extra week, they'd avoid the Pacific Classic and ship across the country to run in the Woodward here in Saratoga on Labor Day or Labor Day weekend. And that, I don't know if that would make it more risky going into Del Mar off a race that's not at Del Mar, because the Breeders' Cup Classic is at Del Mar this year. So if he doesn't like that track, that's a problem.
Absolutely.
Bill, Baffert was on the Steve Bick Show this morning, and he said he's not going to Saratoga. He's going to keep him in San Diego. And he worked very well. He did like a 4:47 this morning. So he's just going to stay there. Now, my gut feeling on Arrogate is, you know, he was coming from being completely shut down for a while, a couple months. And, you know, I think Baffert kind of insinuated that, you know, all the screws aren't going to be tight to run in the San Diego, you know, handicap. You know, it's great, too.
Yeah, $200,000.
He's halfway through his training into, you know, the Breeders' Cup. So, when Baffert says after the race, you're going to see a different horse in the Breeders' Cup, I think that's his way of saying, you know, he's working his way into it, you know, way off. Yeah, you know? It's a prep race.
Yeah. Although that would explain why he got beat two lengths, or he got beat a neck, or he tired in a stretch. It was just such a non-effort. It was just so. I mean, it's a mystery, and we'll have to see. I mean, you know, anybody you probably. He'll be favored next time he runs, but you'll probably get a square price. I mean, it's speculation, but you know, there's more of a question mark than I guess there ever was. That leads in, and I want to talk about a different topic in a second, but well, Steve, I want to go back a little bit to with the stewards. I guess in the past I've been told that, you know, when rough riding got out of hand, it was much like referees in a basketball game that said, okay, you know, you've had your fun now, but before somebody gets hurt, we're setting a new set of rules. They would call people in. Mike, you'd know this better than I. They'd call people in beforehand and say, you know, we want clean riding now. You know, we're not pointing fingers at anybody, but starting today, it's going to be a cleaner run. The way you would warn two basketball players who are throwing elbows at each other. You know, okay, this is it's now done. You're going to get called on every foul now. And I don't know if that happens anymore or that's needed. I mean, Cordero was the one who was most famous for daring them. You know, I mean, the stories were that they'd warn Cordero not to be rough, and he'd go out and he'd be twice as rough just to prove a point that he could. And you know, there were always battles between the stewards and Angel Cordero about various you know, rough riding. But I don't know. My true concern, and in case anybody's listening, is I don't want to see one of these guys get hurt needlessly, because you know what it is. If you're taking an edge and you're being super competitive, and people are getting away with it, everybody expects you and asks you to do it. Your employer and your trainers and your owners say, you know, I want you to ride as rough as the next guy. And sometimes it's a sobering reality when you realize what that comes up. But enough about that. What I do want to talk about is, from a gambler's standpoint, and Mike, we touched upon this a little bit early in the show. We have the Whitney on Saturday, and Gunrunner is going to be the odds-on favorite. I don't know how much odds-on. Maybe he'll be 2-5, you know, maybe 1-5, I'm not sure. And he's facing Keen Ice, who Jerry Crawford's horse, who, of course, we have. Jerry's a fun guest on the show and a good friend of ours. We hope they, you know, he loves Saratoga, and he'll probably be the second choice. But Luch Racing is running two horses, and the two horses are owned by the same people, trained by different trainers. They're running as an uncoupled entry, but one of them is very clearly in as a rabbit for the other. So Cautious Giant is the horse who is speculated to be the rabbit, and I think more than speculated, I think the owner of Luch Racing, Ron Paolucci, said as much in an interview. And he's going to try to keep an honest pace and keep Gunrunner busy for his uncoupled entry mate, War Story. And the Racing Association has the ability to make this a coupled entry or an uncoupled entry, and they've opted, surprise, surprise, to have it an uncoupled entry, so it's another betting interest. But now this horse, Cautious, I said his name, but it just skips my mind.
Cautious Giant,
who's acting as the rabbit, you know, we'll have people make bets on him, and his intent is not necessarily to win that race. Now, I guess to come full circle, the New York steward, Bob Lewandowski, made an announcement today that he interviewed both Ron Paolucci, the owner, and trainer Anthony Cortarolo, who's a friend of ours, who's a good guy, and they both assured him that their intent was not to be a rabbit, but to win the race. And I don't know if they spoke to the rider. I'm not sure who the rider is, Mike. It's Jay Brocco. I'm not familiar with him. I don't think he's ever ridden the horse before. Probably from the Midwest. But you know, there's real question whether the stewards are doing a disservice to the betting public on that. And I guess I'll ask for everybody's thoughts on that.
Bill, they're an uncoupled entry?
Yes.
They're an uncoupled entry, right. And, you know, it's now, there's people out there who bet names, and there's people who bet colors, and there's people who bet jockeys, it doesn't seem to me like it's a good thing for the betting public, because it seems like it's a no-win situation, right? It's Jose Brocco from Delaware, rides mostly at Delaware Park.
Delaware, yes.
He's coming up to ride this horse. I apologize to Jose Brocco for not knowing off the top of my head. But it strikes me that it's problematic, no matter how it turns out, right, to have them uncoupled.
Well, you know, Bill, it's an interesting thing, because if you look at the race and how it's going to set up in the Whitney, I don't think Gunrunner is going to be first or second. I think he's going to be laying third, because Two Brutus is in there, who's a quick horse, and I know he's going to be very close or onto the pace. So I actually think that Cautious Giant is going to actually help Gunrunner and maybe hurt War Story's chances.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, they were stated as saying that Ron Paolucci was quoted as saying, you know, he entered him to make sure Gunrunner doesn't get an easy lead. So, you know, I guess that runs the question, is it make sure he doesn't get an easy lead, or make sure he doesn't have a safe trip? I mean, you know, can you envision someone kind of playing bumper cars through the stretch, or doing everything in his power to get in Gunrunner's way? I mean, is that what we want as a sport?
No, not at all.
Well, Bill, you know, there's nothing new about rabbits.
No.
I mean, the rabbit.
That's true.
The 2016 Belmont had a rabbit. So this is the one thing I think that we're actually seeing fewer rabbits by connections than we did, say, 10 years ago. It's kind
that's,
of a
that's probably off. Right. That's probably right, but really the question here is not that he should be able to enter. I'm not taking issue with him being able to enter. That's fine. What I'm taking issue with is the steward's decision to allow them to run as an uncoupled entry, and that's within their discretion. And you know, I don't even mind them trying to legitimately, and when I say legitimately, within the rules, trying to help his entry mate. You know, obviously, I'm not advocating him causing a foul against Gunrunner, but if he makes Gunrunner's life difficult, that's, you know, all's fair in love and war. But I think it's a mistake to allow the betting public to bet on that horse. You know, people who don't know any better, because you can't win on that. You know, I guess it gives the game a bad name. If you bet on that horse and somebody says, well, of course that horse wasn't trying to win, and the owner said he wasn't trying to win, and then he didn't win. You know, on the other hand, if lightning strikes and he does win, and you have somebody who bet War Story, you know, the other half of the uncoupled entry saying, what is this? You know, I performed due diligence. I read all the information I could. The owner stated this was to try to help War Story win. It just seems to me that the path of least resistance and I know the answer. The answer is it's a financial decision, not a legitimate one. But I think to protect the interest of racing, there should be a coupled entry.
Steve, you still there?
Yes, I'm here, Pat.
When we were, you know, handicapping, I think it was like maybe last meet, one of the things we were looking at, because it was becoming so prevalent, was when there was an entry which should have been coupled, but it wasn't coupled, to play the longer shot. That for a while, that seemed to be coming in. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yeah, a trainer has two horses in the race, and everybody's concentrating on the 9-5 and the 13-1 wins.
That seemed to be really the norm for. I mean, it was a short period of time. Now, Bill, you remember when the rule became, you know, it was used to be an automatic coupling. What was the reason behind the uncoupling?
Yeah, good question.
Well, it used to be an automatic coupling if they were in the same barn, not necessarily owned by the same people, the same trainer. You know, the same trainer was an automatic entry. And now, granted, that was back when the most horses any particular trainer had was like 40. I remember 40 was considered a mega barn. You know, now a mega barn is 200. Oh, maybe 400 nationwide, 500. So that used to be an automatic, and then they came to the conclusion that they just had a flat-out horse shortage or a betting interest shortage, and they said, well, you know, it's kind of ridiculous to think that, and Mike, refresh my memory if I'm wrong about this, I think it was in stakes races first. In stakes races, they said, look, there's a purse of $1 million. There's no betting coup going on here. That if for a big race, we'll assume every horse who's entered is trying to win, and they'll run a separate betting interest just to help the betting handle. You know, and then the thing was, well, as long as they're not owned by the same people, then it
That's
became
correct.
It was a stakes race.
Yep.
Right.
Stakes race.
And then
yep.
it was.
Yep.
Then it was okay. So I think now in New York, if they're owned by the same people and owned by the same people, they're an entry. Unless it's a stakes race, and then the stewards have the default position is that it's not an entry, but the stewards have the discretion to make it an entry if they think in their discretion it's the best interest of racing. So, you know, this is kind of the only instance where that would come into play, and I don't know why they didn't pull the trigger and just say, look, you know, they're an entry. You know, we. By the statement of the owners and more importantly, our expertise as, you know, to our racing secretary, it looks like this horse was entered largely as a rabbit, and we're going to make a 6-horse field rather than a 7-horse field. Now, I know the answer. The answer is the betting handle is something that they're trying to increase rather than curtail. But, you know, it's going to leave somebody with a sour taste in their mouth, I think.
Bill, it just seemed to open up the whole topic of the conflict of interest, you know, when a trainer has a couple of horses in a race. I mean, you know, you're training them both, theoretically at least, to win that race. But, you know, how realistic is that when you're given, you know, when you're talking to the jockey about how to run it and everything? In the back of your mind, you have another horse in the race. And I'm not suggesting that anybody's doing anything purposely, but in the world we live in where everybody's trying to eliminate conflicts of interest, that would seem to me to be a somewhat obvious one.
Right. Now, they had the problem last year, right? And it was a Chad Brown horse. Was it Flintshire? Aaron Greider on another Chad Brown cleared out everybody at the top of the stretch, was on the rail and just bore out and took out everybody, and Flintshire came up the inside. But they were owned by different people, so at least you have some governor in there saying, you know, if I'm an owner, I don't want my horse used to sacrifice
right.
to be sacrificed to help another owner. But in this case, it's the same owner, and I just question the wisdom of allowing it to happen. It just doesn't seem like it's something they should do. And I feel bad for the rider. He's going to be under wild scrutiny. And, Mike, we know Anthony Cordarolo. He's a good guy, and he doesn't need to have this kind of pressure on him either, I don't think.
First the pressure and then bad publicity. No, nobody wants that.
Right. I'm just surprised it wasn't a bigger issue. But I know they made a statement today that, they interviewed both the trainer and the owner, and they assured them that they're looking to win the race. Now, I'm sure everybody'd be happy to win the Whitney. I don't think that's the effort. But it seems like the intent is to kind of sacrifice that horse. And I just feel bad for people who'll be betting on him, Not knowing, thinking they're being protected by somebody, and maybe they're not. But enough of that. This is a controversial show. Let's talk a little bit about some horses on the undercard. The Whitney is 11 race card on Saturday, and I guess the two horses that caught my eye, and I haven't done the whole handicap, and Mike, Pat, Steve, maybe you have. But Delta Prince runs again for Jimmy Jerkins. Delta Prince is a full brother to Royal Delta. It's kind of a nice horse. That's a nice horse who's probably developing into something good. And Tony Dutrow brings back Motown, who everybody had great high hopes for, and he runs in the last race on the card, which will kind of be, obviously, when everybody has left the track after the Whitney. But those were the two that kind of caught my eye over the weekend. Any thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's a great card. I think it's a great card on Whitney Day. We also have a couple of really good baby races. A couple of promising 2-year-old races. I like the Weyer Stakes. The Weyer Stakes came up to be a nice field, a nice 8-horse field. It's an all the beautiful. There's a nice 2-year-old race on the grass that drew. I think that has a field of 14 or 16. So, nice 3-year-old races. A couple of good allowance races. Altogether, a very, very strong card. There's also a nice 2-year-old race on the dirt, and I got to tell you, it's really going to be a close trainers race. I think between Todd and Chad. I mean, they're both going to great guns. Todd won 4 of the first 5 races the other day. He won a couple on Sunday, and I think he won 1 or 2 today. So Todd's firing on all cylinders, and the babies are running.
The only thing I would say, Mike, I guess the last weather forecast is 100% chance of rain on Saturday. So some of these turf.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
They may come off. So hopefully, the weather's been so unbelievable the first part of this meet, but Saturday's looking very weak. So. The card may blow up a little bit on Saturday with some of these turf races, which is a shame, but it happens. It happens. So I'm not going to look at the card too closely until Saturday morning.
How about Bob Baffert shipping in for the test with Rafael Bejarano with Fapien, a Ghost Zapper filly out of a Freud mare. I mean, who knows with Mr. Bob. When he ships, he's shipping for a reason.
Yeah, no doubt. We've seen that.
You know what's real interesting, and it's not off topic, but it's kind of fun to reminisce a little bit. You look down at the names of the races, the undercard of the horses that are named after. And, Mike, you spoke of Weyer, and Weyer was just a beautiful filly and mare who came from France, and she she won everything. And this was back when, like in the late 70s, when it was kind of uncommon for Europeans to come here. And she was just so tremendous. I mean, she just came here and she won everything, and she went on to become a great broodmare. So it's nice to see her remembered even by a name there. But do you remember, Mike, there was a, and Pat and Steve, I don't know, maybe may have been before you were involved in the game, but Weya came over, but she was the second one. They had a horse. They brought a horse over named Flying Water, and Flying Water was great. And she went through the inner rail and died breaking her shoulder and making a move up the inside. Mike, do you recall that at all?
I don't.
I'll have to pull it up somewhere. There was a horse called Flying Water, and John Cregay rode her, and she was just brilliant. And I only say that because when she opened up our eyes at how good the European, the French fillies were, a year or two later when Weya came over, she wasn't as big a surprise, you know. So it's a long time ago, but I'm glad they're remembering Weya. Later on the card, they have let me just see, the fifth race is named after another one that was the sixth race, rather, was great. The sixth race was named after seventh race. I looked at it earlier. I couldn't. The Lore, of course, Lore was tremendous, right? He was a grass champion for Shug McGahey. You know, Lore was among the best grass runners you could have. And I thought there was one other that reminded me of somebody. But anyway, for us, it's nice to see those names come back into the Della Rose. Do you remember Della Rose, Woody Stevens horse?
Yep, very much so.
Yeah, he was owned by Henrik D. Kwiatkowski, I guess, who kind of invented the helicopter or some story. There was always some story about where he made all his money in aerospace. But anyway, it'll be interesting. Pat and Steve, you want to get a good look at a horse, look up a horse named Flying Water and see how brilliant she was. I wonder if there's anything on YouTube about her. There may or may not be. But Pat, when does the rain look like it's starting? Is it starting Friday or is it just on Saturday?
A little bit Friday, and then Saturday looks like a washout. Too bad. I just Googled this Flying Water, a French mare. You're right that John Cruguet was, she got injured and a broken shoulder.
Wow.
1978.
I don't remember if that was in New York or was it in Laurel. I forget. I don't remember where she got it.
On her second American start, she was in the New York handicap on Belmont.
Wow.
Okay.
Early in the straight, Flying Water collided with the rail and fell with John Cruguet getting thrown. So that was her second race, the New York handicap at Belmont. Where she was put down on the track.
Oh, wow.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. But she was so brilliant the first time, you know, and it just, you know, but there was another filly, Dahlia was before her, you know, the French used to come over, and that was like a big deal because so few of them came over. And, you know, now it's kind of commonplace, but back then it was a big effort to come over. And, anyway, it's that's when the Europeans and coming from behind really kind of was something that American grass horses didn't do. It was the Europeans with these tremendous late runs that, you know, passed the whole field at once and left you kind of breathless.
All right, Bill, I got it. Bill and Mike, Friday afternoon showers, 50%. Saturday, 90% chance of rain in Saratoga.
Wow.
Thunderstorms early. So that will kill the turf. You know, I haven't looked at it at all. Are there turf for stakes races on Saturday?
Yeah, like every other race is a grass stakes. As Mike alluded to, there's the beautifully bred two-year-old races, but who knows, you know, you don't know what to do with them. Actually, for our listeners, next week is the week, the following week is the week where all the really great two-year-olds come out, because that's the race during the sales. That's they try to unveil the really, really good ones during the sales, with the idea that if you win a big race during the day, that'll be fresh on buyers' minds when they go to the sales that night, and they'll maybe overpay for the same type of breeding that night. But with that,
it,
It's Steve here, Bill. One thing I just wanted to pop in here. If it's going to rain, I'm just noticing that in the second race Saturday, there's a $83,000 maiden special weight. And the owners that, that you taught me quite a bit about, Jim and Susan Hill, have the number three horse in the second race, $83,000 maiden special weight. It's called Eight Town, trained by Brian Lynch and ridden by Rosario. And I noticed that the sire of this horse is Spitestown, and my recollection was that he liked it wet out there.
Spitestown. Offspring love it wet, right? I mean, you're 100% right on that. Tomlinson number is 448. It's hard to get much higher than that, you know. So that's, you're right. That'd be Brian Lynch operating on all cylinders, and as we spoke, Jim and Susan Hill. You know, my article, I'll pat myself on the back, mentioned Mrs. Fitriani Hay as someone to watch, and she won a race the other day, a two-year-old race, the first timer with Wesley Ward, and paid six and change. Not a big thing, but you know, when you're literally one of the richest people in the world, you know, you can point for Saratoga. We don't have that luxury, but she is one of the richest people in the world, and that's what she points for. So. With that, I guess maybe we'll leave the show on a joke. Did you hear the statement today that the Queen Elizabeth, one of the reasons she's made it to 91 years old is she has a strict four alcoholic drinks a day? Did you read that story?
Did not.
Nope.
Yes, she starts in the morning, has a glass of wine at lunch, and then two more later in the day. Sounds like she's been in Saratoga.
Yeah. Well, I guess I commented to my wife when I read that, yeah, she doesn't have a fifth one, because when she has a fifth one, she becomes a royal pain.
Hey, Bill, I don't know if Steve and Pat had a chance to see it, but we have to comment on the first-time start, a two-year-old that Chad Brown unveiled on Sunday. If you guys, I don't know if any of you guys saw that race, it was the fifth race on Sunday. Broke from the rail, won in 110 and change, and in an absolute gallop. This horse is a serious racehorse.
Yeah.
And it's a New York bred, I think, too, as well. Am I right about that? Or no?
No.
No, okay. I'm confusing it. But I did see it. It won by 12 lengths or so. Oh, what we didn't speak about, which we should speak about, is paid-up subscriber. Won a race by 35 lengths, I guess he got injured this. He got injured this morning, and he's retired.
Yes.
Did I read
yes.
that?
Yes.
Oh,
you're right.
And how did he get injured? He couldn't have been back on the track that fast, could he? Was it something in the stall?
I don't know if it was cooling out after the race or the way he came out of the race, but I know he. I think he fractured a bone in his right foreleg, and Chad said that she would have to be retired. How about that, the Shuvi? $200,000 race on Sunday, a three horse field in the Shuvi.
Yeah, I don't get it. The Shuvi's a graded stakes race, and it's $200,000 purse. Granted, it's not $500,000, but you think they could have dug up somebody else. And I guess the comment was, no one wants to run and have their horse be embarrassed. But meanwhile, the horse won by 32 lengths. So those horses who were second and third were pretty embarrassed in their own right, and they still cashed. They still
exactly.
cashed the check, you know. You know, and you know, I don't understand it. I don't get it. I don't know why they ran it, and if they did run it, I don't know why they ran it in the first race. Again, I guess just trying not to screw up the pick sixes and the pick fives, or I guess the late pick five. But it's a disappointing thing to see, you know, that type of race get no interest. But
you know something else that we didn't touch on, Bill, was, I'm sorry, on how difficult this meet is. I mean, not just for trainers, owners, but you know, the jockeys who go out there and work hard every morning. I mean, you look at a couple of the jockeys who have had great Belmont meets and stuff, and they're really having a tough go of it. Like Paco Lopez hasn't won a race yet. Dylan Davis hasn't won a race yet. Junior Alvarado. I mean, you know, these are top riders in any colony. But it just shows you how hard it is up here. And how difficult, you know, the races are for the jockeys too.
Yeah, I mean Manny Franco, who's riding as well as anyone. You know, he's gotten a win or maybe two, but you know it's just been tough.
Three for 61, Bill.
Is he 3 for 61 up here? Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, on another note, I know that at the opening night party at the Shores that we were all at, they honored Javier Castellano. He's having a fairly tough meet so far from what I've seen. Is there any I'd heard one story that he had lost some trainers. Is there anything to that at all? Or
he seems to be riding for the same people, but you know the Ortizes are the first choices now. They're both riding lights out, and Javier's 8 for 59. In the beginning, Javier was 1 for 37.
Yeah,
he's having some tough trips too. I mean, it's not like he's, it's not like he's riding horses who have no shot. He's had a lot of trouble, and I don't know. I guess it's like anybody else. He's being inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2 weeks, you know, which is a great honor. It's kind of too bad he's not doing well at the time, because I'm sure that's a great honor for him, and it's, you know, obviously a big moment in his life. But yeah, I don't know. It seems like he's having trouble in a lot of different races, and you know he was another one who claimed foul or didn't claim foul. He had that horse on opening weekend down on the down when Lady Eli came in and kind of caused that chain reaction, and he was quoted as saying he thought it cost him the race, but he didn't quite know who caused it, so he didn't claim foul, and it was a steward's inquiry, and there was no change. So I don't know. I don't know if it's I don't know if there's something bothering him in particular, or you know whether it's physical or it's just a slump, but it's I hope he comes around.
I know what happened, Bill. At the Ceres party opening night, Steve caught Javier's ear and chewed him for about 20 minutes about how he beat him in a $25,000 pick five ticket.
I told him, I playfully admonished him for costing us a $36,000 late pick six ticket at the Travers a couple of years ago when he rode VE Day. By a nose over Wicked Strong, and I told him as much as I love him, I felt like he owed me a little bit for that one, and he didn't see it quite the same way, but he knew it was tongue in cheek, and but Pat may be right. Maybe he just feels so badly about what he did to me, he can't bring himself to beat anybody else anymore.
Or maybe you're just a Jonah. Maybe you're just a cooler. Even being around you causes. Causes people to lose.
Well, I've heard that accusation on multiple occasions. Yes, I have.
Yeah, Mr. Freeze,
I just sent,
right?
Bill, I just sent you the picture of Steve all over.
Too funny. Well, I think we lost Pat right there. As a matter of fact, I think Steve, I think you had your way there that he wound up dropping off on as he was making fun of you. Well, with that, guys, I think maybe we'll wrap it up a little early tonight. I was happy to have Ricardo Santana, Mike. Thank you, and he's yet another guy who's just,
Special thanks to his agent Ruben Munoz, who's a good friend of mine and a great agent who I contacted to set it all up. And Ruben was more than helpful in making it work. He's just a well spoken young rider, just another young talented rider on what I think is the best colony in the world right now.
Yeah, it's tough as nails right now to be a rider in New York. So, let's look forward to maybe getting some good racing in before the rain. And I guess I'm looking at the card. And one good thing is that there's plenty of horses in every race. There's a lot of main track only, so we'll probably have relatively full fields, even if there's some heavy rain. And if not, we'll just regroup and go up there for another see good racing another weekend later in the meet. Again, my thanks to Mike Monroe, Pat Cannon, Steve Scroey, and to Ricardo Santana and Ruben Munoz for arranging that. And maybe we'll, if there's nothing else, maybe we'll play the song and be out.
Sounds good, Bill. And before we leave, watch on Saturday. whether it's sloppy or not, another Chad Brown, first-time starter named Engage by Into Mischief. He's the number four horse in the sixth race on Saturday.
Okay, Saturday, Saratoga, sixth race, number four. Excellent.
Right.
Engage. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Play the song. We'll speak again next week. Spread the word.